ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central. Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central. On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Well, it's a beautiful day in Chicago. Welcome in Sports Central. Adam Hogue, Kevin Powell with you. Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. And we are still doing the show.
I'm back, Hogue. You can't get rid of me.
I just wanted to go outside and play. Like, we could go play catch.
Yeah, that would be fun. I think I'm going to go and get some lunch after this and try to find a patio or something to eat outside, or at least hang out a little bit.
Like, it's just lunch or just regular lunch?
It's just lunch. And it doesn't always have to be it's just lunch. You can always go for a cocktail after work as well. I like to clarify that to people. It's not strictly lunch.
Yeah, because lunch to me is like not a date.
Well, I think that's the idea. It's super casual. It's super simple. It's easy. Not very stressful.
All right.
You don't need it's just lunch. Joe, do you need it's just lunch?
No, I'm good.
He's good.
Ooh, breaking news.
Yeah. Joe's good. All right.
Speaking of people who are not going to be having lunch anymore, Pernell McPhee, the Chicago Bears, will jump right in with today's lead.
Second and six for Carolina. Panthers have two timeouts remaining and the two-minute warning, but they're down by two scores. Newton, pocket collapses. Newton is sacked. Pernell McPhee.
Was that your favorite Pernell McPhee moment?
I guess so.
Man, okay. This has been in debate the last 24 hours. And by the way, the news that the Bears cut Pernell McPhee came out right at the end of yesterday's show. So we did not cover it yesterday. We're covering it today. A lot of criticism of the signing and just, you know, how it's a complete bust.
Well, I think it was a disappointing run in Chicago. Considering it was the first marquee free agent Ryan Pace signed, but I wouldn't call it a disastrous signing or anything like that. Which I think some people were kind of making it out to be. I think some people love dogpiling on Ryan Pace when they have an opportunity. Some people just are not all in on Pace, and yeah, I saw people.
That's obvious.
And I saw people pointing to this, and I think they look at it as a chance to dogpile on Pace.
Well, before it was, we'd love that the Bears go out and spend money on free agents, but they're terrible at drafting. Now it's, this guy's pretty good at drafting, but his free agent record's terrible.
And you can't even convince some people that he's good at drafting, considering people are still bitter about him trading up for Trubisky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I still can't get over that. We're in Chicago. Like, the home of horrible quarterbacking. And a guy finally goes out on a limb and gets a quarterback at the top of the draft, and everyone's like, what? What? He drafted a quarterback?
But not only that, he looks like he's good.
Right?
And some
people think that, like, media or fans give Trubisky a break a little bit because they want him to succeed. But I also think it's a two-way street. I think there are some people who are like, nah, I don't know. Because they hate the fact that Pace did what he did in the draft. So people may be doing the opposite in that regard.
Well, so I had this argument with some of my father's bowling friends over the weekend.
Nice.
So these are your
Those are the guys that call
these are like
Trubisky's and the Bears.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It was definitely a Trubinsky.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I'm just never going to get over the fact that he didn't have to trade up to get him. And I go, well, do you like him? Like, do you like Mitch? Yes, I do. I think he's going to be good. Then who cares? Like, you're that upset about a third-round pick.
Well, and I'll say this as well. It doesn't matter. I mean, you could basically eliminate that entire draft class if the only thing that matters if Trubisky's good, if he's a guy that's going to be here for 10 years, then it was obviously worth it. And if he doesn't turn out, the rest of those draft picks don't even matter anyways. Because you're set back 5 years anyways, you're going to be drafting another quarterback.
I tweeted this after this news of Pernell getting, which we all knew was coming. Pernell was not going to be on this team next year. But I tweeted this yesterday. He is a great example of the risk and challenges of quickly signing a player when the new league year opens. You know, a lot of times, if you have the time, you will bring a player in, visit the facility, go to dinner with them, Do you have a little bit more time to do homework on them? But the first wave of free agents that comes through, that it's like it's 3 o'clock. Sometimes they don't even visit. Sometimes this just is just GM agent conversation, highest bidder. Player wants the money. All right. And when you have a guy like Pernell McPhee, who has a history of knee problems, they got worse once he got here. He required microfracture surgery. But the Ravens had a good idea of his medical history. The Bears did not. Now, you can do your homework. You can find out some of this stuff, but you're not going to know a player as intimately as the team that drafted and developed that player. Okay? It's just not going to happen. And when you quickly sign a guy on the first day of free agency, those are the risks you're taking. You're spending a lot more money, and you probably don't know all the information like you do when you draft a player, and you have 4 months to prepare, and the scouts are working on these guys for a full year. So this is going to happen. And the one nice thing about what Ryan Pace has done over and over and over again with these contracts, whether it's Jarrell Freeman, whether it's Quinton Demps, who was also released yesterday, whether it's Josh Sitton, whether it's Mike Glennon, who's probably going to be cut. None of these signings are hurting you going forward. They look bad. Oh, guy didn't work out. It wasn't a great signing. Fine. But the contracts have all been structured so that they don't hurt you going forward, so that you can shed them and create a bunch of open cap space, and they're not hurting you in the future. And so if you have a general manager that is drafting well and signing players to team-friendly contracts, even if they end up overspending for 1 year, as long as it's not holding you back in the future, you're going to be in pretty good shape long-term. Now, you still got to hit, and I'd like to see him do better with free agents, no question, and you got to keep hitting in the draft, which is not going to be easy. But the Bears are in a really good spot right now. They have all the flexibility in the world going into March 14th when they can sign more players. And I have a feeling maybe Pace is going to stretch the pocketbooks a little bit more for some of the marquee names, potentially. But I also think you're going to see mostly free agent signings that are similar, more Class B, Class C instead of Class A, team-friendly deals, prove-it type contracts, which a lot of times aren't going to work out, but when they do, and no one wants to mention Akeem Hicks, brilliant signing, sometimes you're going to get those guys too, where it works out. So that's what Ryan Pace's plan has been. I don't think it's been a bad plan, even though a lot of these free agents haven't worked out.
Yeah, I think it's all well said. I think in the NFL, people have to realize that the turnover rate is so constant in the NFL. Right, I mean, it doesn't seem like you see an entire roster intact for a long extended period, save for a couple core guys who are Pro Bowlers and it can stay healthy. The turnover in the NFL is unlike any other major professional sport. So I think you give a 5-year deal to a guy, it doesn't necessarily mean you're putting all your chips in the middle of the table. You know what I mean? Like, okay, if Pernell McPhee's gone after 3 years, whatever, they're the next man up anyways.
That's how you have to treat free agency.
Especially in the NFL.
Because if you think you're signing, first of all, the lifespan of these players is just not long enough. The agents all know, and they tell the kids when they're getting drafted, they tell the guys that they want coming out a year early. Your real money is coming on your second deal. So the earlier you can get to there, the better. The less mileage you can put on your body before you get to there, the better.
Right.
And you rarely... The players who get the third payday, now we're talking perennial Pro Bowlers and Hall of Famers. Very rare.
Very rare. Small percentage. Also, you're not winning a Super Bowl by free agent signings. Right?
No. I mean, like, there's not, you got to draft first.
I can't even think off the top of my head where a team had a major free agent signing that put them over the top. Can you? No.
Put them over the top.
Made them a Super Bowl contender.
You could say pieces.
Pieces, but look, the bottom line is if you have an elite quarterback or not. And most every team has drafted that quarterback.
Right.
I mean, the Saints traded for Breeze, but that was kind of a different situation. Brady to the Patriots, Rodgers with the Packers. Those are the sorts of deals and things general managers can do to make you a Super Bowl caliber team. Not some free agent signing. Some outside linebacker's not going to make or break your chances at winning the Super Bowl. I mean, of course, they're all pieces, but That's not the most important. I would rather have a general manager that knows how to identify talent for the draft and draft well than a general manager who is a guy who can win free agents over.
I mean, just do the math. You're talking about the lifespan of NFL players being somewhere around 3 to 4 years, okay? Rookie contracts are only 4 years. So you're signing these free agents when they're already headed into year five.
Right.
Or if you're getting value with one of the undrafted guys, they're heading into year four. So if you just do that math, even if they're good and they last to 6 or 7 years, they're probably breaking down before the end of that contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's where baseball is right now, where teams are like, wait a minute, we don't want to pay for past performance. And the players are like, well, wait a minute, we should be getting paid for past performance because you just paid me the rookie minimum deal, essentially. It's a little bit different in baseball in the NFL because yeah. In baseball, you could sign a Yu Darvish and make yourself a World Series favorite. A little bit different in the NFL, but it's kind of the same thing where if you're relying on signing free agents and building a team via free agency, you're gonna run into some trouble. So if Ryan Pace's draft picks right now, to me, like that, he's done fairly well in the draft so far.
Yeah.
And it's kind of tough to tell. You can't really judge these draft classes until a few years down the road. But I'd rather have a guy who can identify talent at the collegiate level and draft well than some guy who can open up the checkbook and win a free agent over.
Now, he is going to have to, whether it's signing free agents or draft, the one gripe with the draft that I've had is that we're not talking about Pro Bowlers. You know, Jordan Howard did make one Pro Bowl. We're talking about good picks and good situations. But if you look at the first rounders, you know, I think Mitch is probably going to take a big step forward this year. But you know, I had Pro Bowl expectations for Leonard Floyd in year two. They weren't met. Now, he was having a pretty decent season. I don't think he was having a Pro Bowl season.
No.
And then he got hurt. So, again, he's got to stay healthy. Kevin White, very unlikely he ever makes a Pro Bowl.
Probably never going to happen. But those sorts of drafts, I want to pick your brain on that. Because people will rip Pace and be like, he was a bust. Kevin White was a bust, but it's also, it was injuries. You know what I mean? So if Kevin White stayed healthy, is he not a bust?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Pace hasn't really done anything that you can crush him for in the draft. You know, he has fair excuses, but when you still stack up 3 years, where are the high-impact players? And now, I think that there's still hope that a lot of these guys can become high-impact players. Eddie Jackson.
I was just going to say Eddie Jackson. He's a guy that can solidify the safety spot after 10, 15 years of Bears safety rolling around and nobody to hold down the position. So
I think Mitch can be one of those players. I think Leonard Floyd can be one of those players. I think Tariq Cohen can be one of those players. I think Adam Shaheen. And there's a lot of guys with upside, which is the buzzword this time of year as we head to the combine tomorrow. You know, upside. That's what everybody wants.
You excited about the combine?
Yeah. No.
Do you like going or no?
It's productive. It's not necessarily exciting.
Yeah.
It's very productive. I leave there every year going, okay, this was you know, worth it. And
in terms of scouting and things like that?
Yeah.
For yourself?
Yeah. And we will have tomorrow's show. Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy will be speaking with the media in Indianapolis. I will be there. Kevin Powell will be back here, kind of driving the show, but we will have all that for you tomorrow on Sports Central.
Awesome.
So you have that to look forward to.
So are you leaving tonight for Indy, or are you going early in the morning?
No, I'm heading down there tonight. Yeah.
Tonight. Okay. You'll be back Thursday?
Come home late tomorrow.
Yeah. All right. Nice little trip for Hogue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
It's not quite South Korea, though, like our next guest, who is back from a long excursion to South Korea to cover the Olympics. His name's Eric Adelson. He works for Yahoo Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Adelson. Welcome back, Eric. Great work while you were out there. And I just want to start by asking, in what I'm sure was a very fun 3 weeks and busy and hardworking 3 weeks, just what were the highlights for you?
Oh, thanks. Good to talk to you guys. Happy New Year. We haven't talked since 2017, so it's good to be on again. And I think for me, the women's hockey. I mean, it was just another incredible matchup with Canada in the gold medal game. Three periods, overtime, end-to-end play on the big ice, and then the shootouts. Just a remarkable moment in sports. It's hard to find another rivalry in sports that's that much better than that one. And I know it's not one that comes immediately to mind for sports fans, but it should. The curling was great to see the U.S. pull the huge upset there. A great story. And then up on the mountain, you had, America basically owns these snowboard sports. I didn't cover that. It was my colleague, Jeff Passan, who I'm sure all your baseball fans are well aware with his work. But that was also, memorable too. I just love these Olympic stories. I mean, yesterday I'm flying back, 13-hour flight from Seoul to Atlanta, and Dale Jr. is on my flight, and he's just another passenger because everyone's talking about the gold medalists on the flight too. Huh. You had Jesse Diggins and Keegan Randall were showing the gold medals. There was an ovation. There was a champagne toast for these Olympians, cross country skiers, and Dale Jr. sitting there, and everyone's just kind of looking at the skiers instead. It's just really cool to tell these stories and be around them.
Hey, Eric, some people strictly look at the medal count to characterize an Olympic performance for a country. Some people look at the storylines and how things played out and how many fourth and fifth place finishes and how close some athletes were to medaling. How would you characterize the U.S.'s performance? 23 total medals, and I think the Olympic Committee was projecting somewhere in the 30s and maybe even more than that if they performed really well. But how would you characterize it for the U.S.? Would you call it a disappointment coming home with just 23 medals?
You know, I have to say it's disappointing. It's not what their goals are. It's not what I think we expected. I think we expected more medals, or I'd say better medals out of the skiers. And women's figure skating, which I covered and wrote about a little bit, it was the worst performance points-wise ever. So I think it was disappointing overall. I mean, it definitely doesn't detract from the excellence of individual performances and just the effort to be there, just being there is special. But yeah, I mean, it's a sport. It's not an exhibition. It's a sport. You play to win. And the Americans overall didn't do as well as they should. And I think it's time that they, I'm sure they'll take the next 4 years and really look hard at that because I think they'll win the bid in 2030. I think Calgary has a good shot at 2026. And so there's going to be, more eyes on these Winter Games after Beijing. And I think that the U.S. needs to sort of gear up and really try to take home more medals in those games.
Eric Adelson back from South Korea, where he covered the Olympics for Yahoo Sports. You touched on the women's hockey team. I want to ask you about the men's hockey team. You had a column about, kind of putting the blame on Gary Bettman for the NHL players not being there. That being said, you also touched on the fact that there were a lot of fair excuses for why Gary Bettman kept the NHL players out of the Olympics. But what that left was a very, very good Russian team above everybody else. I thought the USA team was pretty competitive. I have the greatest grasp of what the real expectations were for that team, but I thought that they were very competitive, and it left me wondering, how good could this team have been had they had the NHL players on the team as well?
Yeah, I think they would have been medal contenders, the Americans, if they kept those NHL players. I think that basically the tournament was completely diluted. I love seeing the college kids. I mean, personally, Ryan Donato is Harvard, Jordan Greenway is Boston University, Troy Terry is Denver. I love that. I mean, I love seeing them. They were awesome in this tournament. It was great to cover them. But the thing is that basically there was only one good team left, and that was the Russians. And it wasn't the tournament it could have been or should have been because of the Bettman decision. And then you had, I appreciate the talent on the Russian team. Kovalchuk is somebody I've covered for many years. Datsyuk is outstanding, and I'm very happy for him. But you have Slava Voynev, who was kicked out of the NHL because of domestic violence. He was an integral part of this Russian team. It just wasn't a good look for hockey, to the men's side of the tournament, made up for it, I think, by the women's side. But still, I expect the NHL to be back in 2022, and I think that they really should.
Someone else you wrote about and has a connection here in Chicago is Chris Chelios, who was an assistant on that USA hockey team. And you kind of hinted that maybe he's not done with coaching, that maybe this is something he'll get into. And he's, what, 56 now?
Yeah, no, he looks like he can still play. I watched a couple of his practices, and he looks like he's one of the best players out there. I think he's got the bug. I think that it's talking to him, he's like, yeah, I got to make a decision, but he wouldn't be out there coaching if he didn't want to do it. I think that he'll get a chance to do it. I think that he's so respected. He's so smart. Honestly, if you're just looking at him in terms of his credentials, he was in charge of defensive penalty kill, and he did very well with those young guys on those. And so I feel like that he doesn't want to be an assistant coach, but even I think that if you bring him in as an assistant and just say, these are your jobs, you won't have any, you'll have full say-so in these two departments, I think he would do it as an assistant. I think we're going to see it, and I think it'll be good. I mean, he's got a good personality. He's obviously very well-respected. He's a terrific enemy, one of the best American hockey players ever produced. So I think there's a good chance, and I think he'd do well with it.
Eric, one of the kind of wild out of the box ideas I've heard tossed around was moving hockey to the summer games so the NHL can participate. Your thoughts on that? Is that even feasible?
I think it's feasible. I've read more respected hockey writers say that it would never happen.
Yeah.
And it makes for a very long year. Because if you have a team that goes, let's say the Blackhawks go deep in the playoffs, and then the next, we're in June, and then you have a month off, and then you're already training. That's a long year. But I wouldn't be surprised, because, it's all about money, it's all about exposure, and these guys to play. And the other thing is that the next market is Tokyo. That's a place where you want exposure and you want eyeballs. And I think that's something, again, the people who are really smart about this and cover hockey day to day, I wish I did still. I love the sport. So those smart people will say never. I wouldn't say never, because I think they'll look at anything that gives the league a chance to have more exposure throughout the course of the year.
One of the stories that you wrote, we're talking to Eric Adelson from Yahoo Sports, that I enjoyed that you went and got, because it was something I was curious. It was very interesting to me watching an Olympic sport involving guns just days after an awful tragedy in Florida. And you went and talked to Lowell Bailey, U.S. biathlon, and got his opinions on gun control, and I found it very fascinating.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised because, obviously these guys and gals are around guns all the time, and they're proficient, and they love shooting. I mean, that's what they do for a living. But they were very passionate about this. Lowell Bailey said that there's no reason for anybody in the citizenry to have that kind of gun, meaning a military-style weapon. And I know, people say, well, an AR-15 is only designed to shoot one. You talk about the magazines. He gets that. I think we all get that. But the thing is that he said the fact that we haven't done anything about this, he said it makes him want to cry. That we need to do better as a society to control guns and to do something that's common sense. Not talking about, well, I mean, actually, he did go as far as saying he was for the assault weapons ban, which expired in 2004. So he's actually, I think a lot of people are sort of taking the middle of the road, saying let's do something, but not necessarily an assault weapons ban. He was even more, I would say, aggressive on that, saying that there's no reason for that kind of gun to be in society. And I think that honestly, wherever you fall on this, if you're in biathlon, it hurts you because you feel like you're associated with this kind of behavior, this destructive, evil behavior, that people who carry a weapon and use it to kill people are conflated and sometimes associated with a gun sport. And I think that bothers them too. So I think it's sort of a double concern with them. One, for Lowell Bailey, he feels like that we should do something to prevent this kind of thing from happening. But also I think all of them were very passionate, saying that it's a jar. Susan Dunkley was an example, the first person that I spoke to. There's a couple other reporters there too, said that it's hard for her to mentally continue with the sport because of this sort of comparison that she has to talk about and face every day. So I kind of went in expecting a defense of guns, but it really was more of a defense of appropriate use of guns and a condemnation of where we are as a society.
Eric, awkward transition here, but as we go from a serious note, gun talk, to something a little bit lighter, Korean barbecue, man. How was the food out there? Did you get anything good? I saw some pictures on the social media of people eating some nice, good-looking meals. Anything good?
Oh, man. There's so much work, and we're working, you know, not 24/7, but 27. You don't really have time for going out.
Yeah,
but,
I hear you.
The meals I had were so good, and I recommend it. It was funny because on the plane ride over, you know, one of the options was bibimbap, which is this beef and rice mix. And I'm like, you know what? I'm in Korea. I'm gonna try it. It was the best airline meal I've ever had in my life. It was so good. And I was just like, can I have seconds on this? I mean, like, can I go back to the galley and, like, deal with another one of these trays? It's just, they just know beef,
yeah,
and how to do that, these things so well. And galbi was the other thing, which is the sort of Korean fried chicken. I'm sure you guys have had that. I mean, it's just, it's so good over there. So
now I'm hungry,
I'm
Eric.
Thinking, yeah, no, I mean, you know, I live in Florida, so, you know, fried chicken is kind of a staple. But this is just a very distinct, very good. For some reason, the Koreans are just really good at this, and good at it in a way that, like, our standbys aren't. Not taking away from Bojangles, because I'll always go to the matches for Bojangles, but they do it really, really well, and I really recommend it. You know, Chicago, you have everything, so find a Korean restaurant, give it a try. It's great.
Eric, appreciate the time. Great work out in Korea. We know it's a grind. We appreciate you coming on.
Great to talk to you guys. Thank you.
All right, that's Eric Adelson, Yahoo Sports, back from Korea. I'm
trying to remember the Korean restaurant I went to a few months ago. It was so damn good. Before the show ends, I'm going to find the name to it.
All right. Make sure you report back.
I will.
We're all really, really concerned about it.
I'm concerned about it. Now I want Korean food. I got to go to this place again.
Follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_Adelson. He has a bunch of columns that are worth reading up on Yahoo Sports, and you can find it there. We'll take a quick time out. Ed and DJ out at the ballpark. Cubs Sox at Sloan Park in Arizona today. Hoping to get it in with the weather. We'll talk to them next on Sports Central.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball to left. This is it well. To the track goes Kemp at the wall. A 380 gone. A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
What?
Yes!
What?
No! What?
Let me think.
Ooh. Yeah!
Good talk, coach. Thanks.
Maybe we should stick the radio.
He's got a point.
Chicago Sports Conversation. This is Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
Great to hear Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson calling White Sox home runs on WGN. That was from Friday, and we got more baseball coming up for you today on 720. Cubs and White Sox at Sloan Park. Adam Hogue and Kevin Powell here with you on Sports Central back in Chicago, but in Arizona at Sloan Park are Ed and DJ. We bring them into the show right now. What's going on, guys?
Well, Adam, no, not a whole lot right now. I'm looking down on a sun-drenched field here at Sloan Park while the ground crew gets the field prepared. They're watering it. You know, it tells you that right now there's no rain in the immediate future. So we're going to get this game underway on a beautiful day.
Well, let's start with the unfortunate news from yesterday. It was very tough seeing Jake Berger go down the way he did. And unfortunately, that kind of stuff seems to happen to... It seems to be one big injury every spring. And hopefully that's all that the White Sox face. But it's a bummer to see the first-round pick from last year go down.
You know what? It is amazing. When I saw that, I couldn't believe it. Because when you go down like he did, you know it's something major. He's a young kid that's about to lose a year of progress in his minor league career, and you don't like to see that because, you know, he's somebody you want to fast track to the big league. He's out of college. He's a slugger that you're thinking he's got the red carpet rolled out for him, and then you're thinking 2 years from now, possibly, he's putting up big numbers. He's taking over at third base. But at the recovery for Jake Berger, it's a year at least,
yeah,
and there's nothing he could do other than just get healthy, rehab it, and then start ready to go the following year.
He's already making consolations. He said, I'm going to lose some weight. I'm
going to get in the best shape I can, and I'm going to beat this thing. You know, we've seen athletes not come back from this. We want him to come back.
Yeah, guys, he said all the right things today that makes you, or it's encouraging at least, that he has the right mindset moving forward. Said he talked to Jose Contreras, who also went through the same injury, and he gave him a little pep talk. But in terms of Berger's game at the plate defensively, I know we only saw it briefly, but Ricky Renteria was raving about his game, his power at the plate, and his footwork defensively, despite being a big man. What did you guys see in that short period just from some backfield works and then from his short stint in a few games?
Well, Darren and I both remarked about this, Adam, that when he threw the ball across the infield, it didn't lose any altitude on the way across. He's got a cannon for a throwing arm. You know, when we look at him, Darren, and I told him at Sox Fest, his back was so big I could show a motion picture on his back and still have room for commercials on either side. But he moved better than I thought he did.
Yeah, you know what? He's a baseball player. Yeah. So the one thing I like about him, when you're watching him, you don't lose anything in the sense that, does he have a weakness? No, he hits the ball over the fence. He gloves the ball at third base. He has a good arm. That's why he's a first-round draft choice. Doesn't matter his body type. He's a guy that's a baseball player. Like I say, you know, you want him to progress and you want him to get the repetitions in the minor leagues. He's losing that this season. And whatever he can get, if it's going to be, as he was saying, lose a little weight, he's going to feel, you know, get the best condition that he can, rehab from this, that's great. But no matter what, he has to get back to baseball action. He has to swing the bat. He has to field some ground balls. And he has to just realize this is a bit of a setback, but he's going to be fine.
His agility was more than I thought it was when I saw him move. After seeing him, I said, this guy can't have much range. He had much better range than I thought.
Carson Fulmer making his spring training debut today. What did you guys see from Carson last year when you saw him, and what are you looking or hoping to see today against the Cubs?
I talked to him the other day. Darren was right by me. I talked to Carson Fulmer, and I said, what are you working on? He goes, my changeup. I said, and? He goes, it's a little harder than what I wanted. It's one of his key pitches. He's got to use that. But his slider's really good, and his fastball's got to keep it down.
You know, again, one of the things we have to remember, guys, is it is spring training. We all have high hopes of these guys excelling in the early part of spring, but they will not even be close to midseason form until, well, midseason. So let's go ahead and get through this. Let him work on his changeup, as he's saying, try and improve upon that. But hopefully each player every single day, and a Carson Fulmer's definitely on that list, has to realize their limitations at this point. They're not at full strength. They're just trying to get their arms in shape, and don't try to overdo things. Just get out there, relax, get the outs, locate your pitches, and don't over-evaluate what your action is today.
Right. It's tough to overanalyze this time of year, but speaking of working on that changeup, that's what Michael Kopech has said this spring that he's trying to work on as well. We know him as the flamethrower, but he's working on being a pitcher rather than just a thrower. What'd you guys see from the two innings of him yesterday?
Well, I didn't see him, but I heard so much about him. He threw a fastball yesterday at 101. That's not really bad. You don't have to wait a long time for it to get to home plate.
Yeah, the thing about Michael for me is, you know, he comes as advertised. He throws 100 miles an hour. He's got a very good slider to go with it. He's working on a third pitch, which is really going to be to his benefit because that just keeps the fastball honest. And if he drops down in velocity, you know, to 99, you know, then you've got the changeup at 91 to go to.
Adam, one of the good things we have, and we haven't had that in some time, where the young guys are going to push the other guys. We get Carlos Rodon back supposedly sometime the end of May and into June. This is a guy that throws 97 to 100, and we're looking for that to happen. Adam, when you look at it, 97 to 100, and he's a left-handed pitcher, and you get him in June or July, that's something you can't go out and buy. You just can't get that talent at that time of the season.
Yeah, and we've all seen when he actually is healthy, he's filthy, and that's a great point. And we can look at it as a positive, getting him back midseason, that could be a big boost for this team.
Well, if this is indeed a look to the future, look no further than the guy at second base today, Moncada. This guy's going to be a star for a while.
Yeah, and both defensively and offensively.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, you have the call on WGN at the top of the hour. We'll look forward to it. Cubs and White Sox from Sloan Park. We'll talk to you guys then.
All right, Adam. Thanks, man.
All right, Adam. Kevin, thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson out at Sloan Park. It's always fun when the Cubs and Sox play, even when it's spring training.
I'm excited. I'm genuinely excited to listen to the game, to watch the game. And we're only 1 week into spring games, but I don't care. It's still fun.
And John Lester going for the Cubs today, by the way. I wanted to bring you a little bit more on this Jake Berger injury. You know, he's a fascinating player because we talked about this when we talked to Ed and DJ on Friday. When I saw Jake Berger at Sox Fest, I'm like, this guy just does not look like a baseball player at all. But
he looks like he should be at the NFL scouting combine this week and getting ready to play linebacker for a team in the NFL because he's as far, Ed put it perfectly. It looks like he put a motion picture on the back of Berger. He's a large man.
So, you know, anytime you have a player like that, and the White Sox have raved about his agility and his athleticism, even though he's at that size, and I'm sure that's all there, but you also do wonder about the injury factor. So, you know, whether or not that there's a connection there, don't know. Hard to speculate, but, you know, it could be a complete random coincidence, too. Unfortunately, he came out, looked pretty good in the limited amount of time he played over the weekend. He had a nice, I think, a double off the wall yesterday before he got hurt.
Right.
And so there's no doubt he's a talented player, and losing this year is going to hurt. There was some sound, we referenced it from today. Jake Berger did talk to the media about this injury, and we'll bring that to you right now.
It was a fastball inside. Hit a third base and run down to first. Just, you know, went down, and I kind of immediately knew something was wrong, but, you know, just maybe there's nothing really to say. It sucks, but, you know, I got to stay positive.
Yeah, it's tough to sugarcoat it, but I'd be lying if I told you this doesn't sting for Sox fans, for the Sox organization. We talked to Rick Hahn 2 weeks ago, and this was before games. He says, look, the first 2 weeks of camp, the only goal is to make sure everybody's healthy and good to go for the games. And then even when the games start, it's to get through camp healthy so guys can get a full year of development in. He's going to miss a full year. He's going to miss a full year of developing in the field, developing at the plate. That stinks. That stings a lot. We talked to Rick Renteria just on Sunday, and I said, Rick, what are your early impressions? I know it's only been two games, and you don't hear this a lot from managers as a whole or coaches in sports in general for young guys. He was raving about Jake Berger.
All I know is that he's hit two balls that come off of his bat like rockets. The ball that he hit yesterday to right, I mean, we looked in. He put the bat on the bomb before we could blink. The ball was in right field. And then we look out there, and the young man's trying to make a dive, and he ends up on third base. Listen, this kid's he's a good kid, hard worker, has a really good sense of himself, knows what he can do, what he can't do. I think he's emotionally in a really good place. He's a mature young man. I think he has a chance of continuing to develop his skill set and being an excellent Major League Baseball player.
It looks like he played linebacker for the Bears. Pretty imposing.
No, listen, he is imposing, but I think when you watch his actions and you see him move, he's a pretty agile young man. He's continued to show that as we've seen him, you know, over the hitter's camp and even last year when he first came on board, and you're watching him, you know, you watch his actions. He's pretty athletic. So we're just looking forward to him getting more at bats and playing the game, getting more and more comfortable in his own skin as a professional. And I think hopefully for us and for everyone, he continues to develop and maybe becomes a part of the White Sox.
Yeah, that's keep in mind, that's pre-injury. That was on Sunday, but that's kind of like salt in the wound, hearing Renteria rave about him and that he's looking forward to more at bats, and then 2 days later, less than 24 hours later, he's down with a season-ending injury. So it hurts, but it sounds like, and I mentioned this with DJ and Ed, that he said all the right things today that you would want to hear, especially from a young guy. Talked to Jose Contreras, who blew out an Achilles in his career, and Contreras told him he lost 30 pounds. So maybe he can give a call to Avi Garcia and Kyle Schwarber about some weight loss programs and maybe what he can do, because he's a guy, and I've said this about Schwarber, where people are like, well, is he going to lose power? Well, he's not going to lose power from losing 20 pounds. He's not going to lose bat speed by losing weight. You know?
No, I mean, we saw it with Avi last year.
Saw it with Avi. So maybe
everything looked better.
Maybe this does help Jake Berger. Maybe he can shed a few pounds to help him in the long run.
But you do worry about the development being lost, and you know, White Sox going through this with another prospect right now, Mike Rodolfo, who has a UCL issue, and basically, so he doesn't lose the whole year, they're going to try to DH him for at least half the season so he gets those at-bats before they have to have the surgery done.
And they may not even have the surgery.
Right.
So they're going to, basically, they're no throwing, trying to rehab the elbow while he gets the swings in. The doctors say, you no more risk of injury if you're swinging a bat, but definitely do not throw a baseball.
Yeah.
So...
And meanwhile, Eloy Jimenez is dealing with a knee issue.
Yeah, he got some work.
Hopefully, it's minor, but.
Yeah, he got some work and some field stuff in today. But you just want healthy and development at this point.
It's like a Bears training camp so far.
Seriously, right? John Fox invade the Camelback Ranch in Glendale. It's a tough injury for Berger. I've had some good conversations when I was out there for a couple weeks, and he's a good dude. He's a down to earth guy. He grew up in the St. Louis area. Huge Blackhawks fan, by the way. He's not Berger's a huge fan. He is wearing his you can see him wearing his Blackhawks winter hat around the clubhouse and some other Hawk stuff. He told me he gets the NHL package so he can watch every game.
Which is great because he's from the St. Louis area.
Yeah, he says he gets a ton of crap from his friends who have and he's
supposedly they have like a team there in that area.
They apparently so, yes. Yeah. Blackhawks fans are not big fans of that team as well. So tough break for Berger. Wishing him the best.
Well, as for Eloy, as he deals with his knee issue, this time last year he was in Mesa with the Cubs, and now as the White Sox visit Mesa today, Joe Maddon speaking a little bit about what was his former prospect now with the White Sox.
I thought he's a bright kid, really bright, very engaging, conversationally inquisitive. Coming from the Dominican, normally the kids aren't like that well versed in English, and at that age, that advanced. So he really demonstrated all of that. Offensively, wow, I mean, the swing was special. It's very special. he's going to be very good. There's no question he's going to be very good. The biggest thing there was his arm, I thought, just to make sure that he takes care of his arm. Defensively, he'll have to work there also. But the American League, they have different options. But as a human being, I was really intrigued by him. I thought he's a great kid.
And we've seen all that with Eloy Jimenez so far with the White Sox. I was impressed with his English and his dedication to learning that, which, doesn't necessarily translate to baseball success, but it is impressive that he's committed to that. Meanwhile, a little bit of Cubs news today, as the guy who's going to take the hill today against Carson Fulmer, John Lester, was already named the opening day starter for the Cubs, and not necessarily shocking, but there was some conversation that maybe Kyle Hendricks, given this, back-to-back great seasons he's had, deserves it. Lester struggled a little bit at times last year, but Joe Maddon speaking a little bit about this decision today.
Johnny Lester will be the opening day starter. I just spoke with him. I wanted him to know how impressed I've been with him already this camp. Beyond what he's done in the past, there's this organic change in him right now that I'm loving. For me, leadership is kind of taken, not given, meaning that you just have to grow into this spot and people start to follow you. And I think John has really grown into that guy.
This reminds me a little bit about of Mark Burley's years with the White Sox. Wasn't always the most talented guy on the staff, but was the unquestioned leader of the group. And if you had asked any White Sox fan any of those years, he should be the opening day starter. So John Lester is that guy for the Cubs right now, even if he's not their best pitcher, even though he doesn't project to be the top pitcher this year. He has a lot to do with where this team is right now, and he's the leader of that staff, especially as Jake Arrieta moves on.
Yeah, and I think for Lester, and I'm not saying in any ways Arrieta or Lackey were holding him back in the leadership department, but I always said those three guys were kind of the leaders of the clubhouse. When those dudes were speaking, everyone was listening. Now that Lackey and Arrieta are gone, I wonder if that's motivated Lester a little bit to step up the leadership game a little bit, be a little bit more vocal. I agree. He carried himself a little bit differently just from what I saw in a couple weeks at Sloan. So it all makes sense. I've also, my entire life, even as a kid, I see headlines, so-and-so named opening day starter, and I was always like, who cares who the opening day starter is? Like, it matters a little bit, but people act like it's this major...
I think it matters to the players, though. It's a playoff-type atmosphere on day one, and they...
For some guys. We asked James Shields about it. He's like, yeah, I've done it like six or seven times. He didn't seem like he really cared.
Yeah.
I just never understood it. Like, the rotation, even in general, didn't even... After 2 weeks, the rotation doesn't really matter.
Well, that's true, but I don't know. I think there is some significance. The fans care about it.
So do you think that the Sox should go with one of their young arms in Giolito, or it probably wouldn't be Fulmer. It would probably be Giolito. Do you think Giolito should be their opening day starter in Kansas City?
No, not necessarily. I think it's, you know, if we're going to look at it as sort of a symbolic thing for the staff, then it's something you should earn.
It also could be symbolic for the team, though, where they're at. Like, hey, this is potentially our ace of the future, everybody. We're going to roll them out there. I think that they should be more concerned with the home opening day starter rather than opening day. Because I think for the fans, it'd be cool to see Fulmer, Lopez, or Giolito walk out on the mound and kind of be that day one, like, hey, everybody, this is a glimpse of the future right here. That would be a little bit more symbolic to me than rolling those guys out.
It'll be interesting to see what the rotation looks like, because they'll play six games, barring a rainout in Kansas City. They won't have a rainout in Toronto, but they'll play six games before they come back to Chicago for the home opener.
Yes.
So that would set you up for your number two starter to start the home opener. So who's that going to be?
Well, it could be Giolito. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the rotation going to look like?
Maybe you're getting what you're asking for, Kevin.
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe Ricky Renteria is listening. But so do you think it'll be Shields, Giolito? Like, do you see Shields and Gonzalez, like, anchoring at one and five? Because wouldn't you rather have those young guys in the middle of the rotation? I guess it doesn't really matter.
I guess it doesn't really matter.
Like, maybe, like, Shields, Giolito, Fulmer, Lopez.
Probably matters more lefty, righty. Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got time to figure that all out over the next month. And we'll see how Carson Fulmer, who, you know, supposedly one of those guys that looks today in his spring debut against John Lester. Cubs and White Sox, top of the hour on WGN. And we'll take you right to the top of the hour before we get there. Buried Headlines coming up next. You're listening to Sports Central on WGNRadio.com. All right, time for Buried Headlines here on Sports Central. And this is a significant one that came out this morning, right? Actually, kind of right before we started the show. But Kevin Seifert from ESPN, NFL Nation reporter, tweeting out, the NFL Competition Committee appears to have unanimous agreement that controversial catch rulings involving Dez Bryant and Calvin Johnson should have been ruled complete.
You think?
According to Giants owner John Mara. So the committee is working on changing the rule to relax the, quote, going to the ground requirement. I'm hoping that this means what I've been talking about here on the show, what I talked to Rich McKay, the competition committee chair, about in Minnesota. And he told us at that time right here on Sports Central that they were all going to meet in Indianapolis and then hopefully have something to vote on. At least by the owners' meetings next month. Maybe they can knock it out this week. I don't know. But they are in Indy already in advance of the NFL Combine talking about this. And based on that tweet, what I've been saying, Kev, is get the going to the ground thing out of there. The moment you get that second foot down, right, on the ground or your knee or your butt or whatever it is that makes it the moment where you either have possession or don't, if that ball is secure in your hands, then it's a catch. And whatever happens after that happens. So if you then go to the ground and fumble it, it's a fumble.
Right.
It's a live ball. If you go to the ground out of bounds and you fumble it, well, then it's just out of bounds. Like a fumble that goes out of bounds. And it counts as a catch. The confusion is all coming in at the ground.
Right.
And they can't figure it out, and replays making it even more confusing.
And in some ways, I think it might have been Roger Goodell actually saying something that made sense. Was that...
Wait, what?
I think it was Goodell. But he said that in some ways they've continued to try to like tack on more hardline definitions of what a catch is, when rather they should be doing the opposite and just kind of use some common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody wants to add, well, okay, well, if whatever it may be, whatever tiny little thing they're tacking on, it's become such a complicated and confusing rule, when I think if you just use common sense, and I think that's why fans get so pissed off, is because they're sitting on their couch at home watching the game, screaming at their TV because it is just a common sense thing. And then you got some guy who's the ref expert, and they go, let's go to this guy in New York and see what he says. And nobody knows what the hell he's saying. And then he gets it wrong. The play-by-play guy gets it wrong. Everybody gets it wrong. And then John Fox challenges into a turnover.
Yeah, what she said's not inaccurate. Seems pretty accurate to me.
Figure it out, NFL. Tighter the damn catch, no catch rule.
I think they're going to figure it out. I think it might actually happen.
This is a throwback buried headline to last year. Do we have this queued up, Joe? Okay. So this guy, Bill Mahoney, he works for White Sox TV, like does video stuff for them. So I'm out in spring training with them, and he's like, Kevin, you got to see this video, man. You got to see this video. So James Shields' locker at Camelback Ranch is right near the bathroom. The bathroom is just like, it's like if you're ever at a country club, it's just, there's not like a hard door to open. It's kind of all blended together. You know what I mean? You can just kind of walk into the bathroom and then walk out. A lot of tiling, a lot of hard surfaces. So anyways, they're talking to James Shields after a start, after he pitched a couple innings. And he's like literally 10 feet from the bathroom. And then this is how it went down.
I'm not that type of guy who walks guys very often. You know, having three walks on the day is definitely not what I want to do. So we're going to go back to the bullpen session here coming up, and we'll see what happens.
You're talking about defense, too.
Guy just farted right behind me.
So what's about your defense? Did you feel your position, too? Does that kind of stick with you a little bit, even though it's spring training?
It kills me because, first of all, you have Shields like staring down the bill because he's cracking up that he just heard the fart. Shields is so dialed in. He's like, well, what are you laughing at? And then you have Merck, who's just...
Merck's
just like still in the zone. Like, no. Tell me about that curveball in the second inning.
He's unfazed. Scott Merkin is unfazed. He is all business.
Like, this guy's farting. Shields is probably being a little bit overly serious after a spring game. Merck's dialed in, continuing to ask
questions. Who is the guy laughing?
That's Bill Mahoney. Oh, okay. He does like White Sox TV, White Sox video stuff.
He the one who actually is...
Yeah, he's laughing.
Who says the guy just farted?
Yeah, because he's laughing, and Shield stares him down and goes, what
are you laughing?
What's going on? And he goes, some guy just farted behind me. Can we listen to that one more time?
That was great.
What happened? Okay. And we'll see what happens.
You're talking about defense, too.
What happened? Okay. Just farted right behind me.
Can we hear the actual flatulence?
Yeah, it'll take me a second.
Reverberating?
I didn't even really... I was trying to listen. It's hard to hear that part.
Reverberating through the hard-tiled bathroom and then making its way into the clubhouse at Camelback
Ranch. I like
how
you're analyzing the wall tile.
Well, because if you're in the shower and let one rip, it sounds different.
We're going to go back to the bullpen session here.
Because I love clubhouses are just such like savagery. There's a guy walking around half naked. There's another guy farting in the. It's just like a bunch of grown dudes being savages. So
they got to get through the season somehow. Hey, the Bulls are officially in pure tank mode. Cameron Payne is not good at basketball.
No.
That's not breaking news. The Bulls lost 104-87 to the Nets. They're in Charlotte tonight. Doing a good job of tanking so far. And I saw a couple highlights of the game last night. Lauri Markkanen got just posterized at one point. Like, full body just running in over under the rim.
I was keeping an eye on the game, and then I blinked, and they were down by 20 points. I'm like, what just happened? But that's just fine. That's just fine with me. To the Nets, who are just awful as well.
Well, it's interesting, because the Nets are one of those teams that do not own one of their picks. So, the tank games, like when they play the Hawks, when they play the teams that are actually trying to lose so that they can have the best pick, the Nets don't own their first round
pick. It doesn't really matter to them.
So they,
so they suck just full suckage.
Yeah, they're just really bad.
Yeah.
But it's really going to be interesting to see suck versus suck, tank versus tank.
Yeah. Man, that trade they made with Boston. Ooh.
Yikes.
All right, we should get out of here. White Sox baseball coming up on 720 WGN. You are going to have to switch over if you're listening live. We cannot stream the games. So
7:20 a.m.
Major League Baseball rules. you're going to have to switch over to your actual AM radio.
By the way, I found a badass radio. You know we have that free table?
Yeah.
But, like, there's always this random stuff there. I found this awesome, like, wood-paneled Sony old-school radio.
I've been looking for an AM radio forever.
It's in my house now.
That's not cool.
I know.
I walk by that table every day.
I got lucky. Yeah. It's this old-school, like... I can't wait, and I'm not lying, I'm going to do this. At some point in the summer, if I'm not at the park, I'm just going to, like, post up with my little AM radio, the cooler, like, six beers, open the garage door, post up and listen to some baseball. You're invited.
I might have to be at the game.
We can share the AM radio.
Joe, what did we screw up today?
Nothing was screwed up, but you guys remember which 9 out of 10... years Burley had started opening day. Do you remember which year he didn't?
Jose Contreras was the guy
part B,
who pitched. Okay, sorry, I answered your second question.
That's right. What year? Do you remember?
That's a part
06?
Close.
7.
Yep.
Yeah, set the whole season off.
And I think everybody was kind of pissed about it.
Yeah.
As Sox fans are like, why?
Yeah.
That was the reason why they were
Jose
so bad.
Jose Contreras, by the way, has been at Sox camp the past couple weeks and been around. And
yeah, they hired him as an ambassador.
Super, super nice guy.
Well, Wiza was there, too. I'm not sure why.
Oh, man. Let's keep him out of the Sox camp.
All right. We're out of here. Switch over 720 WGN. Listen, Cubs, White Sox live. Otherwise, tomorrow, NFL Combine. I'll be in Indy. We'll have the sound from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, who's speaking for the first time. He got hired. Kevin Powell will be here in studio. I'll be in Indy. It'll be a fun show. Make sure you listen and check out the podcast, iTunes, Google Play Store. And please, if you listen that way, please rate and review the podcast. We appreciate you doing that. Talk to you tomorrow.